Information, please. Presented each week at this time by Canada Dry, famous the world over for its fine beverages. Wake up, America. Time to stump the experts. Every week at this hour, we have a who, when, where, why, and how session. Free and easy and free for all. Here's how we do it. You may submit from 1 to 3 original questions. We dare these guests to answer them correctly. For every question they fail to answer, the clever questioner gets $10 with the compliments of Canada Dry. For every question they answer, correctly or incorrectly, the sender gets $5. That means $15, which is money in any language. Don't fret if our editorial staff changes or edits your questions a little. All questions become the property of Information, Please, and should be addressed to Canada Dry, 1 Pershing Square, New York City. And now may I present our master of ceremonies, Mr. Clifton Fadiman, literary critic of the New Yorker magazine. Mr. Fadiman.
Thank you, Mr. Cross. Ladies and gentlemen, may we remind our audience that these questions come to our experts for the first time now, just as they do to you. Our 4 bright guests for tonight include our 2 regulars, John Kieran, sports writer and knowledge carrier extraordinary, and Franklin P. Adams, columnist of the New York Post, who continues with what appears to be not the slightest effort to come through with the correct answers, sometimes. As our guests of honor, we have with us Dean Taylor, the celebrated composer, musical authority, writer, and all-around expert, and someone we're very glad to welcome back to Information, Please, Mark Duffield, day news editor of the Herald Tribune. We're delighted to have you with us tonight, Mr. Taylor and Mr. Duffield. Remember, gentlemen, raise your hands if you think you know the answer. When or if we find out that you're wrong, and it may happen, Canada Dry will ring up $10. And out that $10 goes to the lucky questioner. Now, the first one that comes to us this evening comes all the way from Seattle, Washington, from its foreign chief Sandow, and has to do with fairy tales. I'm going to ask you to identify the fairy tales which, if they were streamlined and rewritten as mystery thrillers, might be called by the following titles. The first is The Case of the Agricultural Wonder. Now, Mr. Duffield.
Jack and the Beanstalk.
Jack and the Beanstalk. A bullseye for the day news editor of the Herald Tribune. What other one might you mention that would fulfill the conditions of The Case of the Agricultural Wonder? Perhaps Peter Pumpkin Eater, who put his wife in a pumpkin shell. There, he kept it very... You would admit that, Mr. Taylor? Don't like it?
That comes out of the head of Scott.
Oh, I'll throw it out. How about The Case of the Hurried Exit? The Case of the Hurried Exit.
Let's hear it.
Cinderella. Cinderella. Very good. The Case of the Uninvited Guest. The Case of the Uninvited Guest. These begin to sound like pretty good mystery stories.
Too bad.
Let's hear it.
Little Red Riding Hood. Well, she didn't ask the wolf in.
No, but wasn't the wolf already there, as I recollect?
Not when the grandmother was alone.
Yes. It's technical, Mr. Kieran. You may have me there.
Let's quibble
for a second or two, shall we? No, I think not. You go and pack up your quibbles in your old kit bag, Mr. Kieran. Let's go on to the next one. How about the case of the usurped nightgown? The case of the usurped nightgown, if I may so put it. Tricky one. Sorry, gentlemen. It would be Little Red Riding Hood, Mr. Kieran. That's where you should have come in. Don't you remember the wolf put on grandmother's nightgown and disguised himself that way? We have 1.5 wrong, I'm afraid, out of 4. And $10 plus $5 for sending in the question are going out to Miss Sandow, courtesy of Canada Dry. The answer in the case of the uninvited guest, of course, is Goldilocks and the 3 Bears. Wouldn't that be right? The next question, coming from David S. Parry of this city, has to do with the derivation of 4 rather unusual words. What is the derivation of these words, and how did they come to have their present meaning? The first is colossal. Colossal. Now, Mr. Adams.
From the Colossus of Rhodes.
What was the Colossus of Rhodes?
He had quite a span.
Yes, indeed. I'm going to ask you to tell me how long it was. It was a large statue. A very large statue of Apollo, about 120 feet high, as it says here on the card. And hence we now say huge, say colossal for huge or gigantic, or for any third-rate Hollywood production. Would not be right, Mr. Taylor. Bedlam. Mr. Curie.
Bedlam was the shortened English form of Bethlehem, which was the town in which the insane were quartered.
That's quite right. I think it was simply a... it was a quarter in London, or was it a hospital?
No, it was outside the
just
city.
Just outside of London. And now what does it mean?
It means a riotous gathering of any kind. A lot of noise and great excitement, but can learn nothing.
Yes. The oldest newspaper story in the world. Here. Weird. W-E-I-R-D. Weird. A derivation of the word weird. Simple word. Sarah, want to crack it?
I think it's an Anglo-Saxon word meaning fate or destiny.
That's exactly right. Exactly right.
But it has come to have the meaning of uncanny.
Yes, that's what it means now. I used to be an editor some years ago, and I remember that when writers, even very good writers, send in manuscripts, the word which was most frequently misspelled was the word weird. Mr. Adams, how do you spell it?
W-E-I-R-D.
I guess you're not a very good writer. All the good writers used to misspell that word in the manuscripts they sent in. Pandemonium. Karen?
Well, pandemonium is the Latin and Greek derivation, both. Well, rather, it traces all the way back to the Greek. And
I think so, yes.
From the demon, all the demons together,
yes,
is what the word means.
That's right. And what does it mean nowadays?
A terrific uproar.
Yes. And what famous English poem does the word occur? You know? It's in Milton's Paradise Lost. I think that the place where all the devils are kept in the Inferno is called Pandemonium in Milton. I'm not sure about that, but I do think it's true. The next question, about 4 out of 4 on that one, comes from T. Randolph of New York. How do the following places figure prominently in the news recently? There are 4 of them. The first is the hardest to pronounce, Dodecanese. How did that figure prominently? Mr. Duffield.
Dodecanese Islands are being fortified by Italy. Troops are being sent there.
Who owns them? You have to ask that these days.
Italy still owns them, last I heard.
Yes. Indore, I-N-D-O-R-E, Indore. How did that figure in the news recently? Mr. Duffield again.
I believe Indore has a Maharaja who got married.
Yes. Do you know whom he got married to?
Got married to an American girl who was his nurse.
That's right.
Not saying that.
Mr. Duffield, is information please his own Walter Winchell decision. That's right. Florina. F-L-O-R-I-N-A. Mr. Duffield again. Read the papers, my guy.
Florina is a girl, a city in Greece, to which little Skander fled when he was 3 days old, and his mother, Queen...
He was helped.
His mother, Queen Geraldine, went along.
Yes, Queen of what country?
Of Albania.
Yes, of Albania. And then I believe she was followed by King Zog a little later on. Now, the fourth and last...
And her mother-in-law.
Oh, that makes a perfectly happy family. The fourth and last is Kingman, Arizona. Kingman, Arizona. What happened there recently? Made front page. Mr. Duffield.
Somebody probably got married there, and they probably came from Hollywood to get married there.
Who?
Well, now, I hope you wouldn't ask that.
Oh, well, but I do. I'm perfectly merciless. Mr. Taylor.
I think you're Gable and Lombard.
You know them by their last names? Rather familiar.
Well, I mean, Clark and Carol, excuse me.
Carol Lombard and Clark Gable, yes. Nice looking couple, too. But that's right. That's 4 out of 4. No, they do read the paper. The next question from Nick Spanos of Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, has to do with, of all things, gate crashers. You have to identify the following gate crashers. There are 4 of them. First, who got by the guards disguised as a piece of statuary? Or perhaps disguised in a piece of statuary would be more correct. Mr. Taylor.
Did you say got by the guards?
The guards, G-U-A-R-D-S.
Well, the Trojan horse.
Yes, the Greeks.
The Greeks, the Greek regiment.
You want to tell us that whole story in about 5 seconds? That's 2 seconds gone, Mr. Taylor.
Yes, well, all right, they got in.
That's right. Yes, the Greeks got into the wooden horse.
And
the Trojans didn't know what the horse was, and curiosity overcame them. The horse was drawn within the walls. You know, Mr. Taylor.
I believe they thought it was a some sort of votive offering to the Greek god, and they thought they'd take it into town.
Yeah. Now here's another question about gate crashers. Who not only crashed a gate, but walked away with it? Mr. Taylor.
Samson took away the gates of Gaza.
Yes.
Yeah, on his back.
You're
I don't know what he wanted with it, but he took it.
I don't know.
Halloween.
You seem to be rather an authority on gate crashing, Mr. Taylor.
Well, I was a music critic for 4 years.
Ah, that explains it. Who got in to see the greatest general of her time, disguised as a rug? Not the general, but the she. Mr. Kieran.
Cleopatra.
Yes. I think Julius Caesar.
Julius Caesar.
Yes. Yes. But Cleopatra is the end.
Antony came later.
Antony did come later. It's a famous scene, isn't it, in Shaw's Caesar and Cleopatra, in which Cleopatra rolls herself up in a carpet and has herself borne into Julius Caesar's house. Four and last on gate crashes, who broke into a house to get himself a meal, but instead got himself in hot water? Very simple. Sorry, gentlemen. It's the Big Bad Wolf and Three Little Pigs. Oh. Remember? The Big Bad Wolf and Three Little Pigs. Well, that's going to cost... I beg pardon.
But that was turpentine. That wasn't hot water.
Well, it was hot. Fairly hot.
Well, it was hot, but...
You're quickling this evening, Mr. Taylor.
I'm not.
Well, if I had said turpentine, you would have known it.
Certainly.
It's too late. Awfully sorry.
Well.
The Big Bad Wolf and Three Little Pigs. And that is going to cost Canada Dry $10 plus $5 for the question going out to Mr. Spanner. The next one from Miss Sybil Haywood of Los Angeles, California. Very interesting question, I think. You're asked to recognize the following very familiar songs, there are going to be four of them, from the verses, which the pianist will play. Now, you have to register recognition either by singing or playing the choruses of these four very familiar songs. The verses are going to be played. Now, if you'd rather play than sing, it will be quite all right with me. But now, a gentle hint. Very well, number one. Miss Sharon, do you want to sing it or do you want to play it? Can you play, buddy?
That sounds to me like the chorus. I can play it with two fingers.
All right. Just take your two fingers over to Janet and see what you can do.
I'll do the same thing.
This, by the way, I believe, is Mr. Kieran's first appearance as a musical artist on Information Please or any other program.
Don't mind if I change the key, do you?
I don't think you can help it. Well, he's practically orchestrating it, Mr. Kieran. I assure you all, ladies and gentlemen, that was Mr. Kieran's playing. That be right? That seems to me to be the chorus of the Sidewalks of New York, unless I'm wrong. How about the next one? The whole thing only has two notes. Mr. Taylor! Mr. Taylor's going to play the chorus for it. Mr. Taylor. Just for my benefit, Mr. Taylor, what is the song you were playing?
Night and Day by Cole Porter.
Night and Day by Cole Porter. Very good. Number three. Mr. Taylor. Very restless man, Mr. Taylor. Tell us the secret. What was that?
Alexander's Ragtime Band.
Yes. By whom?
Irving Berlin.
All right. We have to be very precise on this program. Fourth and last. If you boys want to sing, it's quite all right with me. Mr. Adams, do you feel like singing?
And when a pretty waitress brought them a tray of food.
That's my mother was a lady.
That's quite right. I can tell from the words. Thank you, Mr. Adams. What you were singing, was that the chorus or the...
No, that was the continuation.
Do you know the chorus?
Yes.
Go ahead.
My mother was a lady like yours you will allow, and you may have a sister who needs protection now.
Thank you, sir. I knew he could do it. I knew he could do it. Well... So far, our keeper of the strong box has had to cover the blind spots in the memories of our
experts. I can't play.
I beg pardon?
I can't play.
No, no, but you can sing beautifully.
Thank you.
Let's see, we've lost, or rather Canada Dry has, $20. And while these boys are reproaching themselves for the one or two slips they made, let's listen to a short message, shall we, from Mr. Milton Cross.
Thank you, Mr. Paderman.
Every year at this time, thousands of fortunate people climb aboard great ships and cruise to southern lands. Those who go ashore at Jamaica will learn that this tropical island produces the very finest ginger root in the whole world, the only ginger that is used in the making of Canada Dry. The traveler may see this choice ginger being cured by Mother Nature, for only the natural rays of the tropical sun can give ginger root true flavor and aroma. He may also meet Canada Dry's resident buyer, who is responsible for selecting the finest grade for Canada Dry ginger ale. And when the traveler returns home, he may boast of having spoken with the island workers in their native tongue, which happens to be English. But he may sincerely boast of having seen the cultivation of the principal ingredient of a beverage that is famous throughout the world, regardless of the language that is spoken. For Canada Dry ginger ale literally finds its way from Jamaica to the tables of the world. And your table should be no exception. So remember Canada Dry when making up tomorrow's shopping list.
An entrancing travelogue, Mr. Cross, and clocked in exactly 68 seconds. And now, if you gentlemen are ready, we'll go on with the last half of this inquisition, beginning with a question from Miss Mary Elverback of Minneapolis, who wants you to identify in all its parts the following short poem. From the great lakes of the Northland, Scots whom Bruce has often led, hail, divinest melancholy, ain't you shamed, you sleepyhead? Is that all perfectly clear?
Have to have them all?
You have to identify each of the lines.
Mm-hmm. Start again.
Very good. From the great lakes of the Northland, Mr. Adams.
The Song of Hiawatha.
Very good. By?
H.W. Longfellow.
We're not going to get away with a thing here this evening, Mr. Adams. You don't want to sing that for us, do you?
I wouldn't mind.
Sing the Indian Lament.
It's been put to music.
Sorry we haven't brought the music for it. That's one. A Scots whom Bruce has often led is the next line. Mr. Sheeran.
I think that's Bobby Burns. Scots, it begins Scots Waha.
Yes.
Wallace. Bled.
Yeah. That's right. Scots whom Bruce has often led to welcome to your gory bed or to victory. That's right. And the third line, Hail Divinest Melancholy. Mr. Taylor.
Hail Penseroso by John Milton.
Yes, by John Milton. And the last line, Ain't You Shamed, You Sleepyhead? Mr. Adams.
R.L. Stevenson.
Very good. And what's the name of the poem from which the line's taken, Mr. Adams?
Well, it's one of the Child's Garden of Verses.
That's right. I can't pin you down, can I, this evening? Slippery as a needle.
Something about a little bird.
It is a little birdie with a yellow bill. I think he tapped upon my windowsill. Isn't that right? And did look upon me in my bed and said, ain't you shamed, you sleepyhead, something like that. Four out of four lines, correctly identified. The next one has to do with the history of the United States, coming from Mr. Urban Rubel of Newark. In what months did the United States enter the following wars? The first is the Revolutionary War. In what month did we enter the Revolutionary War? Mr. Sheeran.
Well, it was April 19th that the shot was fired, heard around the world.
That's generally thought of as the opening of the Revolutionary War. April 19th. The Civil War. The Civil War.
That same month, those got all the way.
I beg pardon?
I think that same month, those got all the way down the line.
Well, I haven't gone down the line yet, Mr. Garfield. Well. are you so sure of that? When did the Civil War open?
Well, if nobody else wants to guess, I've already guessed April.
April's quite correct. I was just kidding you. That's quite right, Mr. Duffield. Very good. Fort Sumter was fired on April 12th, and 3 days afterward, President Lincoln called for 75,000 volunteers, which is generally, I think, considered the first day of the war. Now, the Spanish-American War, when, Mr. Duffield?
April.
April? Yes, April 25th, 1898. And the World War, Mr. Kieran?
April 6th, 1917.
Yes. I've never been more anxious for May than I am now, Mr. Chairman. Quite correct. All those four wars began in April. The next question from T. Patrick of Portland, Oregon, has to do with light opera. I'm going to ask any of you gentlemen to describe very briefly the situation on the stage that leads up to the following selections taken from light opera. So Janice is going to play a part of the selection, and you have to tell me what preceded it in the way of plot. Very well, the first. Miss Adams.
They lie to the Mikado about the death of Nanki Poo.
That's right.
The criminal fired as I dropped him down.
That's right, that's right. That's exactly it. You mentioned everything except the fact that the opera, of course, is written by your two favorite...
Sullivan and Gilbert.
Sullivan and Gilbert. All right. Never known Mr. Adams to fail on Gilbert and Sullivan yet. Let's have the second one. Know that, Mr. Taylor?
Think so.
All right. Take a crack at it.
Beckmesser, the town clerk, has come
in
to...
In what opera?
The Meistersinger.
By what composer?
Richard Wagner.
Very good.
Beckmesser, the town clerk, has come to serenade Eva, the daughter of Pogner, and has a good deal of trouble because Hans Sachs insists on staying outdoors and keeping time with him.
Very good. Hammering on a shoe.
Hammering
it?
On a shoe,
yes. How does the scene end? Do you remember?
The scene ends in a free-for-all.
Yes, and then a riot. Pandemonium.
Yeah. Pandemonium. Yeah.
Bedlam.
Bedlam. Or even bedlam.
Yes. Three and last.
I'm the only man in the world who knows what that is.
Well, I thought I'd get you on it, Mr. Taylor. Tell us about it, will you?
Well, the retired something or other merchant is explaining that he has a terrible time with his nerves. And it is from an opus called The Echo, written for New York University in 1909 by...
William LePaler and William LeBaron.
Thank you, Mr. Adams. I'm Mr. Taylor. That's right. I should tell you, Mr. Taylor, that you have a much better memory for your own immortal compositions than Mr. Adams often has for his. We've caught him once or twice on poems that he wrote almost as long ago as that.
Not songs that I wrote.
No, not songs.
Oh, I never forget.
Three out of three. Very good. Are you happy that we recall that to you, Mr. Taylor?
I'm delirious, thank you.
But I think. The next question, very serious one indeed, from Miss Helen Greenberg of Brooklyn. On what side of the bank's ledger would these appear? And why? I think we've never had a question on finance before. On what side of the bank's ledger would loans appear? Now, there are only two sides to a ledger, gentlemen, in case you've never seen a ledger. On what side? Do you know what the two sides of a ledger are?
Credit and debit.
Yeah, assets and liabilities, to make it sound more imposing, Mr. Kearing.
Yes, sir.
Loans would be on what side?
On the asset side of a bank.
Why?
Because it's to their credit. That's they count that as money in their bank.
Yes, they have to be loans have to be paid back eventually to the bank. Now, how about deposits? Monsieur.
Deposits are liabilities.
Why?
They owe it back to the people who put it in.
That's correct. And how about cash? Do you remember the word, cash? Cash, monsieur.
Cash, it depends on whose cash it is, by the way. You mean how it's carried on their ledger?
Yes.
That's an asset.
Yes, belongs to the bank.
Right.
Right. And capital. Mr. Chairman.
Well, capital...
Have any of you other three gentlemen ever been in the bank, by the way?
Yes, capital. That's why I wouldn't answer any of those.
All right, Mr. Chairman, go right ahead with capital.
Well, they have several divisions of their capital, but the capital as represented by stock certificates, is a liability.
Why?
Because they owe it to the stockholders.
That's quite correct. Four out of four. And that establishes Mr. Kieran as a financial expert.
It's all theoretical with me.
Mr. Adams, couldn't let me have 10 till next Tuesday, could you?
Well, Mr. Adams, you take a chance today at a freehand pun for me?
Yes, I have my head in the clouds.
How about when a bank juggles its ledger accounts, what is that called, do you think? Just made this up. We can pass over it very quickly. Mr. Kieran.
Ledger de main.
That's right, Mr. Duffield. Thank you very much. Ledger de main. The next question from Chester D. Snell of Car Scarsdale, New York, is a question involving analogous sports. If the following were engaged in a mile race, in what order would they finish, taking each man's record time for each event as a basis? I hope you follow all that. I'm going to name four people. Glenn Cunningham, Stanley Gadrin, Klaas Thunberg, and Jay Burke. In what order would they come in? They're all athletic contestants in different fields of endeavor. How would they come in?
Who's the first one?
Glenn Cunningham, Stanley Gadrin, Klaas Thunberg, and Jay Burke. Now, I can tell you what their individual sports are, Mr. Kieran, if you wish me to.
Oh, I wish you would, yes. I know two of them.
Glenn Cunningham, of course, is a runner. Stanley Gadrin is a bicyclist. Klaas Thunberg is a
skater.
And Jay Burke, single sculls.
Single stroke.
That's right. Now, how would they come in if they were engaged in a mile race?
The bicycle rider would be first, the skater would be second, Cunningham would be third, and the oarsman would be fourth.
That's quite correct. Thank you very much, Mr. Kieran. And speaking of records, Mr. Kieran, or Mr. Adams, or Mr. Duffield, or Mr. Taylor, how long do you suppose, it just occurred to me, how long do you suppose an open bottle of sparkling Canada Dry would retain its carbonation?
Forever.
Very, very nice of you to say that, Mr. Adams. Actually, 24 hours. 24 hours, which is long enough. We have time, I think, for another question. This comes from Carl C. Spay of Corning, New York. Name a great ambition in the life of each of the following characters. Captain Ahab. Now, Mr. Kieran.
He wanted to get that white whale.
He wanted to get the white whale in what book?
Moby Dick.
Moby Dick. And may I plug that book over the air as one of the greatest American novels ever written. Moby Dick by Herman Melville. He's been dead a long time, so we can plug in. Mrs. Jiggs. Mrs. Jiggs. What was her great ambition? Mrs. Jiggs.
Raise good cabbages.
Nope. Not Mrs. Wiggs. Mrs. Jiggs. To get into society. Don't you remember the famous cartoon? I think the McManus used to draw it.
Bringing up father.
Yes. Was that right, Miss Taylor?
Bringing up father.
Bringing
him up, as a matter of fact.
Is it still going?
Oh, yes.
Yeah, I'm glad to know that.
That
third, Merton Gill. Yes, Mr. Taylor.
It'd be a good movie, actually.
And the Mikado, Mr. Adams. Mr. Kieran.
Make the punishment fit the crime.
Three out of four. That's going to cost us $10 plus five. Thank you very much. Well, it seems that our experts' efforts have, and a redistribution of wealth, worked out to the tune of $30 altogether. And now, after a brief message from Mr. Cross, I'll give you the lineup for next week.
We have frequently reminded you that when you dine out at your favorite restaurant, club, or hotel, be sure that you order sparkling Canada Dry water. Perhaps some of you may have thought, why? Well, there are a number of reasons. Because it makes your favorite drink taste better and stay livelier longer. Because a special formula makes this fine club soda blend well. Because it surpasses all normal standards of purity. And have you written for your copy of the Information Please Gain? It's simple to obtain, for all you have to do is mail the labels, or if it's more convenient, the caps, from two bottles of any of Canada Dry's many beverages. Mail these labels or bottle caps in an envelope with 10 cents to cover the cost of postage and handling to Canada Dry, 1 Pershing Square, New York City. Or if you live in Canada, the address is Canada Dry, Toronto, Ontario. Include your own name and address, and the Information Please Gain is yours.
Thank you, Mr. Cross, and thank you, Mr. Duffield and Mr. Taylor, for being with us tonight. Next week, we'll have with us our three regulars, Mr. Kieran, Mr. Adams, and Mr. Levant. As our guest of honor, we'll welcome the famous radio commentator and political expert, Mr. H.B. Kaltenborn. If you'd like to win $5, or better still, $15, send us your questions, and I'll hurl them at the boys. Remember, $5 if we use the question, and $10 if it stumps our experts. Letters with questions are to be addressed to Information, Please, Canada Dry, 1 Pershing Square, New York City.
There's a long list of Canada Dry favorites. Ginger ale, sparkling water, lime Ricky, and Tom Collins mixer, to name only a few. And economical, too, is the large family size, costing only 15 cents, plus